The content in this program is for informational purposes only. You should not construe any information or other material as investment, financial, tax, or other advice. The views expressed by the participants are solely their own. A participant may have taken or recommended any investment position discussed, but may close such position or alter its recommendation at any time without notice. Nothing contained in this program constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, endorsement, or offer to buy or sell any securities or other financial instruments in any jurisdiction. Please consult your own investment or financial advisor for advice related to all investment decisions. Don't forget to follow at Lead Lag Report on Twitter to join these conversations live. And check out the Lead Lag Report at www.leadlagreport.com. Use promo code PODCAST30 for 2 weeks free and 30% off to get access to award-winning research and anticipate stock market crashes, corrections, and bear markets. And now, on to our Lead Lag Live discussion hosted by Michael Guyatt.
This will be a fun conversation. We're talking on two different parts of the globe, which is kind of funny when it comes to these Twitter spaces. My name is Michael Guyatt, publisher of the Lead Lag Report. Joining me for the hour is Mandy Rufsanjani. Mandy, we're talking, like I mentioned, at different parts of the globe. Where are you based out of?
I am in Australia, in rainy Melbourne.
And I am in nighttime New York, as we're chatting here. Introduce yourself a little bit to the audience. Who are you? How'd you get interested in markets? And talk about exactly what it takes to be an investment coach.
All right. So first of all, thank you for having me. And I really love your title, Trading the Brutal Journey. And that reminded me of a quote from Linda Rushkey's book, Trading Sardines. You know where you can find sympathy between shit and syphilis in the dictionary. And that was a quote from her husband, actually, not from her. So, and it's really true. If you don't have a thick skin, you're not going to last very long in this business. That's also what she says in the book. And I was someone who didn't have a thick skin. I was someone who was not very successful in life and struggling until I found trading. And I thought, oh, wow, here's the holy grail and I can finally be successful because I'm not dependent on other people judging me or thinking what I'm good at or not good at. It's all up to me. Well, that backfired as well because we both know it doesn't work in the wonderful world of trading like that. So when trading came into my life with so many have the same experience, I realized that there were many, many things for me to learn. And so I started on the personal development journey and tried to better myself, try to understand myself. What was it that I couldn't be successful when other people could be? And then learning how to model them and how to learn to bring out the best in me and really become someone who is successful. I'm still on that journey, of course, right? I haven't reached the levels that I want to reach as yet, but I'm very much ahead of where I used to be 20 years ago when I started that journey. So I decided to become a life coach at the time and studied neurolinguistic programming just because I'm so, so interested in human behavior. And was my whole life. A friend of mine said, you know, everybody's complaining to you about their problems. Might as well make money with it, you know, become a life coach. So I did. That's pretty much how my journey started. How I got into trading, becoming a trading coach was when in 2006, so I had been coaching about 2-3 years at the time, life coaching. And so someone in a company called Burst Data here in Australia, it doesn't exist anymore, the company, saw how my trading results started to change. And, you know, we had lunch and he invited me then to go around Australia with him on a roadshow. It was all for this broker and to start talking about trading mindset. That was the beginning of my journey as a trading coach.
So, okay. So I find it interesting that you mentioned that you weren't necessarily sort of particularly successful in different domains. And oddly enough, that's what kind of attracted you to trading. What is it about the business of trading, of being an investor? What is it that made you feel that you could succeed at? Was it more that you felt more in control? Was it that you could analyze things and not have to answer to somebody? What is it that attracted you personality-wise?
It was complete illusion. I went to a course where someone said trading is easy and this is what you do. You just need to follow your rules. And I believed him. And someone else then said, hey, you know, the biggest challenge in trading is that traders are not disciplined. And I'm like, hey, I'm German, you know, we got fed discipline, you know, from early age onwards for breakfast. I know how to be disciplined, but I didn't understand what it actually meant, discipline. And I had no understanding of the concept of discipline. I had this idea of what discipline means, but it's completely not what it means in trading. In trading, it is really about fighting the natural urges and temptations that are completely normal. And I didn't see it as that. I thought it's just following your rules, but it's so much more than that. So what it was that my whole life, I felt that I'm stopped and belittled by others and that they didn't see what I was potentially capable of, that I was at their mercy, that it was up to them to allow me to be successful or not. So I was working for Siemens at that time, you know, big German company. And I was the one doing all the contract negotiations. And so I was in the procurement department. And, you know, I had the high level negotiations with Telstra, our local phone company here. But my colleague was the one who got promoted to procurement manager. I was the one who was still the procurement, can't remember what the title was, but, you know, the low paid chick who did all the work. And that was really hard for me. And it was my experience in life. But of course, it wasn't because of them. It was because of what my self-image was, what I believed I was capable of, and how I expected the world to treat me. And I unconsciously lived that out. So they didn't really have a chance to treat me any other way. In trading, I thought, okay, so it's just me and no one else. I didn't have any analytical thinking. I was highly neurotic, like really all the setups for failing a trading. But when I realized that, I was so committed to overcoming that. And that was what was available for me in trading. When you're in a work environment, you are still dependent on other people in some way, shape or form. So in trading, it's not. And that was what really excited me. I saw the potential.
Yeah, I like the way that you frame that. Now, you talk about being committed to overcoming the domain of trading investing. Let's talk about how you did that, because I think a lot of people, when they are novices, they're first trying to figure out how to trade. They're not really overcoming the market. The struggle is more overcoming themselves, right? So
yeah.
Let's talk about that, because I think the behavioral aspect of trading and investing, I think, is really underappreciated, especially when you consider that the literature shows that one can be aware of their behaviors or their biases. It doesn't necessarily mean that they can change the way they respond.
Yeah, that is so true. And that was pretty much the beginning of my journey, just getting awareness of what my strategy for failure was. So everything in life is a conscious or an unconscious strategy. And when we find out what our strategy for failure is, then we can look at what is the key point here that I need to change. And then look at what is the strategy that successful traders have or successful human beings. It's not just trading. And then model them and implement that in my strategy to reach my goals. So my key problem was that I thought there's something wrong with me. But the only thing that was wrong with me was thinking that was something wrong with me. And it took me a long time to identify that because, you know, when I started, there was no internet. I had to go to seminars, had to buy books. It cost a lot of money. I think I paid at least $100,000 into my coaching and personal development journey. So, you know, courses, seminars, books, and so on. Nowadays, it's all available for free on the internet. And as you said, even though everything is available for free, the stats haven't changed. The stats are still 90% of traders fail. And from the 10% of traders who do succeed, we don't know how many of them are actually able to live off trading and how many of them are able to create a lifestyle. We really need to distinguish between traders who have the institutional journey and traders who go the retail path. It's very, very different. So once I understood what I had to do, so the first 6-7 years, even though I did personal development, Tony Robbins, Landmark, you name it, I've done it. I still didn't understand how to change. So I'm not going to talk about that because it was a waste of time. where I would suggest to start is looking at you doing the OCEANS test, you know, OCEAN, and it's freely available on the internet, and look at how neurotic are you. And when I did the test, I was like off the charts neurotic. Now we are being taught in trading, you have to be resilient and you have to have grit and you have to have patience and all those, you know, powerful words. And I just saw a tweet from Peter Brand who asked, you know, what is it? What's the reason why so many traders fail? And then, you know, the answers were all around patience and confidence, but it's not, right? Because if you look at research, experimental research, we can see that the more neurotic you are, the lower you are in conscientiousness. So doing what you say you do and not doing what you feel like doing, the lower you are in grit and resilience and patience. So it's not about working on your patience and resilience, because that's what I did. It's like, I have to become patient so that I stop impulsively jumping into trades. No, it's about reducing and releasing, resolving the neuroticism, and becoming more even keeled and at peace with myself and creating a new identity, a new self-image of someone who is capable of so much more. I was always looking at the past of how I had screwed up, and that was my self-image, until someone said to me, you know what, you're trying to renovate an old house. Start completely new, you know, create a new house, get your plans out, blueprints, you know, like an architect, and create what you want to who you want to be in life, what you want to achieve in life, and start from there completely fresh. And that changed a lot for me. It was a complete mindset shift.
Yeah, and actually, one, the self-image is most questioned when you're not making money, right? When you're at a loss, right? And it's funny in hearing you say that, it kind of dawned me. I mean, it's maybe it's a weird way to say it, but yeah, you know, you are not your drawdown, and the problem is, when you're in a drawdown, you blame yourself, right? And it becomes, I think, hard to not only climb out of the drawdown, but also climb out of the confidence head. And this is sort of – and that, by the way, is something that's proven a lot of – if you look at the way hedge funds tend to react. So usually when you have a hedge fund go through a drawdown or a multi-standard deviation dislocation, what do the risk managers do? They lower their gross leverage. They lower their net leverage, most likely at the exact wrong time, because there's less confidence around the strategy working, you know, in the here and now, because it hasn't worked in the most recent past. So it's interesting to hear that dynamic, that it's often in the very big declines where everything that you built makes you afraid to do what you should be doing, which is double down and even be more confident for the comeback.
Yeah. And the best example is, I don't know if you read Linda Rushkey's book, Trading Sardines. She talks about those moments when she had massive drawdowns and how she dealt with it. And so that's what I do. I look at successful traders and it's like, how do they think in those moments? What is it that they do differently? And what Linda does is she cuts immediately. Like she says, I don't want to have this baggage and bring that into the next trading day, because I know from that place, I will never make good decisions. I will never make prudent decisions. I will not be able to think rationally because the emotions will be taking over. So she knows that. And so she cuts that loss immediately, repositions. And, you know, even if it's a big loss because something happened over the weekend and the market gapped against her position, she would not wait what most traders do to get out of the more favorable place. And we saw that what happened with CPI last week. Was it last week? Can't remember. When there was this massive back up, I had so many traders emailing me and saying, I got caught in this gap up. I'm so stupid. Why did I stay in this trade before CPI? And then I was hoping that the market will fade, but it just kept going up. And so, you know, you could hear the panic in their voice, not being able to think clearly anymore. Linda has to believe, as long as she is focused and she cuts the past and focuses on the future, that she can make it back and double. And she has proven that as well. So see, that's the difference in thinking. So that's one way I would deal with it. I would say, how does someone think that keeps them paralyzed in doing what needs to be done? Because why are we afraid of doubling up? Because of the consequences. What are the consequences? Well, in many cases, the consequences are that traders don't cut their losses Well, yeah, then you need to be afraid. But the problem is not the doubling up. The problem is you and your self-image of someone who doesn't cut their losses. You see, Linda doesn't have that self-image. She has that self-image of, I can always find a great trade. I know how to trade and I don't care about my profit loss. I care about managing the trade and making money and being able to have a great lifestyle and making money for my investors. It was at the time, you know, when she wrote about this trade in the book. So that is one thing. You look at how the trader thinks, how the risk manager thinks, and you look at what are the fears driving this so that they can think clearly again and can start focusing on the market, on what the market is telling us. And in most cases, Michael, it is really that they don't have a good enough understanding. So the guys who emailed me, I was, you know, I stayed in the trade before CPI because they assumed that there was a bearish setup on the, most of them trade indexes on the Dow. And they stayed in that position, even though there was always information on Twitter, you know, the more experienced guys saying, be careful, CPI, we don't know what that's going to unfold or how that's going to unfold. I hope I answered that question.
Yeah, no. And yeah, it's funny because I known that you were a fan of Linda's, I would have had her on Space. I actually had her on a Twitter Space not too long ago, more a side note. But so I'm going to assume that in Australia, you have the same sort of dynamic as here in the States, which is to say that there's been a broader trend of lower cost per commission, right? That there's less cost to transact over time. You know, obviously here you have zero cost commissions, you know, paying for order flow and all this. Where I want to go with that is I want to hear your thinking on how zero or low cost commissions over time may have actually made it harder for new traders. And I say that because you and I both know that most people get into trouble because of overtrading. And there is a lot of temptation to overtrade when you can basically trade for free. So how has that kind of broader trend impacted, you think, new entrants? How does that impact psychology when it's so easy to get in and out?
So first of all, as I said at the beginning, we all have a strategy for failure and we all have a strategy for success. It attracts a lot of people who don't have much money to trade. And if you don't have much money to begin with, well, then there's something about your money mindset that stops you from, you know, having enough funds to trade a real futures account, for example. So here in Australia, we have leverage, right? 1 to 500, even though they have now reduced it down to 1 to 30. But if you qualify as a professional trader, and it doesn't mean that you make money, it just means, you know, you have to have a certain number of trades and, you know, savings in the account, you get your 1 to 500 leverage. That, what that creates is that traders don't have to think anymore, right? They just get in, they think, oh, I lose a little bit here and a little bit there. And before they know it, they have lost a big amount. Or before they know it, the emotions took over and they're starting to do really stupid things like mortgaging their house so that they don't need to tell the wife that they have lost money and then they lose the house. Right? Like, I mean, that's extremes, but I see that so often. I'd rather get money from other people and say, hey, you know, I know how to trade. Let me trade for you. And then they lose that money and lose their friends. And, you know, like almost everyone has done it and I have done it too. I learned my lessons, so I'm not doing that anymore. And, you know, I paid that person back, but still it's, you know, it's thinking that the answers are in someone else giving you money rather than you becoming better and stronger as a trader and as a human being. So that's one thing. It attracts people who, to begin with, don't have a success strategy. They don't know how to think. They don't know how to think logically, rationally. They don't know how to regulate their emotions. Because if we look at what's the difference between successful traders and losing traders, it's two things. They think differently and they know how to regulate their emotions. So they don't give in to the impulsiveness as quickly and they don't give in to their fears as quickly. They can still think. And that goes back to neuroticism. So definitely it has made many brokers rich and many other people poor. Now we see a new development, Michael. We see all these online prop firms popping up. And I get a lot of traders who email me. I tried so many times to pass these online prop firms. Yes, it's just 200 euros here and 300 US dollars there. But I had no traders who have spent $10,000-$20,000 trying to pass those prop firms. And again, they don't need to do the work that is required to succeed. They don't have the foundations in place, like understanding the markets. And I love your tweet from October the 2nd. And you were, you know, talking about that for weeks, the market is going to melt up. If you understand this, well, why is it that few understand this? Because they don't understand markets. And it's easier to just pay another 200 euros to try to pass the prop challenge than actually trying to understand the markets, because that takes longer, right? We don't get the instant gratification. And I see it so many times that a trader says, oh, you know, a trader who tried to pass this online prop firm was using pivot points and didn't do well. And I said to him, do you know what the difference is, why those pivot points or pivot levels are sometimes far apart and sometimes more closer together? And he's like, no. And so he had no understanding of volatility and what makes those pivot levels. Of course he wouldn't succeed, because then he can't understand why it sometimes works and other times it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, and it's, I think part of that mindset, you can argue, relates to knowing the value of a dollar, right? Of the currency that you're in, right? In other words, you know, if you can understand managing expenses, you're probably going to be more conservative when you invest, which probably keeps you in the game longer, right? Because if you don't know the value of a dollar, because, and you can't manage your own personal finances, you probably are taking excessive risk because you think you'll be able to get it back, when in reality, it's a lot harder than most realize.
Yeah, unrealistic expectations, right?
Well, so that's an interesting topic too, which is that it's hard to really understand what's a realistic expectation when you're inundated with these, you know, so-called influencers who are showing their Lamborghinis and all this stuff, right? And it's really challenging. It's like a lot of people, I see a lot of people that get into trading, and I ask them, okay, so how much did you invest? Okay, I put $10,000 into the market. Okay, well, how much credit card debt do you have? I've got $5,000 of credit card debt. You have a guaranteed rate of return if you pay off your credit card debt. But there's this allure of making more than 20, 25, 30% and doing it quickly, especially with day trading. How do you get people out of that mindset? Because that's a real hard one if all you are seeing and hearing is about these wildly successful traders.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hello, listeners. Michael Guyatt here from Lead Lag Live. Are you ready to take a deep dive into market trends, risk management, and investment strategies? Then you need the Lead Lag Report. Our in-depth analysis helps you understand the financial markets like never before. And guess what? We're giving you a chance to experience it at a discounted rate. Visit theleadlag.report/leadlaglive and get an exclusive 30% off on your subscription. Don't miss out. Level up your investment game with the Lead Lag Report. And now, back to our discussion.
The question to ask is, why do they get attracted to those wildly successful traders on YouTube anyway? That's the first question. And it is because they feel that they're not good enough, like really, really simplified, right? They feel that they're not good enough and that someone else has to come and rescue them. And so the lure of being rescued by someone who obviously is successful because they're saying it, that is an easy escape. When we look at unrealistic expectations, why does someone have unrealistic expectations? Often it's because they made mistakes in the past that they feel ashamed about, and they're seeking some sort of redemption. And that's why they set unrealistic goals, like, you know, I'm now having $15,000 in credit card debts, but I want to make $1 million in trading profits this year, never having made a dollar profit ever. Because when they tell themselves, I make that profit, I can make it, that soothes their anxiety, that makes them feel better than facing the reality of, you know, you have this debt, and right now you have no clue how to get out of that debt. You have no clue what to do about it. So that's what unrealistic expectations come from.
I mean, it's basically sort of a false hope, right? I mean, yeah. I think that's sort of at the core of it, which is, you know, which is also, you know, admittedly sad, right? I mean, it's unfortunate that you have a portion of the trading community that views things that way. I mean, I can make the argument a lot of the mess that we have in the cryptocurrency space also stems from some of that, right? From over the last year and a half in general. I'm curious, okay, so what else goes into having the right money mindsets, right? What is it that you know, you deal with a lot of traders, and I love the international perspective as well, but what are some of the things that you find are common traits that make for a proper money mindset?
Yeah, I mean, it does matter which country they're from or which society they're from. The challenges are always the same. They vary a little compared to the trader's personal circumstances and experiences. But if we look at traders and as a pattern, or as human beings, as people who have patterns of behavior, like the market has patterns of behavior, then it doesn't matter what the individual circumstances, the individual story is. We can always use the framework to work on that. So when we look at money mindset, the reality is, I mean, you're a CFA, right? So you studied markets and money, and it's something that you learned how to deal with. It's a language that you've learned to speak. And most traders haven't learned that language because their parents didn't have that language, and they didn't realize that they have to have that language. So they didn't go out and study it themselves until they get into the wonderful world of trading. I was working with a trader who has been, this was really interesting, was he was a very successful person in the restaurant business. So he started as a chef, became internationally renowned, worked in Switzerland, London, you name it, you know, Paris. Then he came back to Australia, started his own business, super successful, had enough of it, saw the business, got into trading, and has been struggling for years. And then he started one of those prop firm challenges, and that changed everything for him because they have a very stringent money and risk management. And he's like, I completely disregarded money and risk management because that wasn't a fun bit. And that was what got me successful in my restaurant business, because I knew how to manage money. So when you already know how to deal with money, how to speak the money language, then it's easy to translate that into trading. Because what is it that the traders who have money mindset or has an unhelpful money mindset do? They say, I don't want to lose that $100. Now, when I talk to my traders who are highly successful, you know, I'm talking about seven figures a year, that's to me is highly successful. I know you're in different spheres. But none of them talks about, I don't want to lose that $100 or $1,000, you know, would be a few more zeros at the end. All of them talk about, I need to protect my golden goose, aka my capital, that lays the golden eggs. I rather miss out on an epic setup and be annoyed and angry about it afterwards than risking my trade, my capital, because I wasn't sure about it in the moment, because I know there will always be a second chance to join the party and get in it at a different level. That's the key differences already. So when I work with my traders, as you know, I do mindset and performance coaching. And the difference is that in the performance coaching, I look first at my trader statistics. And for them, it's incredibly vulnerable, poor guys. But, you know, I assure them that it's all non-judgmental, and I have to look at them because that's easier for me to find out what's going on for them in terms of trading than the stories that they tell me. Their stories of misery and failure, most of it is dramatized. And they're in so much pain, they can't think objectively. And then they go into, you know, that vicious circle of self-judgment, and, you know, the inner critic is taking over and they can't think anymore. So numbers don't lie. When I look at their stats, I see exactly what is the main mistake that they're making. And then I ask them about it. And, you know, the relief that they feel that they're not screwed up, but that they actually did something in their thinking that they can improve about is massive. So the only reason why trading is confronting and painful is because traders don't know how to overcome their challenges. And so they find almost comfort in saying, I have a mindset problem. But I tell you, in half the time, it's not really the mindset problem that is the problem. It's that they have a skill set that they need to improve on. And I posted that chart on our Twitter feed where that was a beautiful example. So this trader saw a double bottom setting up that was the low, right, on the Dow. And then we had like these 3 days sideways, and he doubted himself and he got out because before, you know, double bottoms failed. And but you already had a week earlier said the market is going to go up. And then guess what? The market rallied another 2,000 points and he missed out on this. That was not a mindset problem. He came to me saying, I always cut my profits short. And then I looked at his statistics and I'm like, no, you don't. You're actually doing really good. You're not always cutting your profits short. But he was in so much pain about missing 2,000 points that he, and plus he started going short when he saw a pin bar. Now in this market, a pin bar, bearish engulfing pattern is not the start of a bear market, right? It takes so much more context. And again, so many traders don't understand the context. And that's what I learned from Linda's work, watching her YouTube videos. Everything is context in the work that she does. She never looks at the setup in a standalone. She always looks at the setup in context of what's going on in the market. And you know, she has a little matrix on her screen looking at what the bunds do, what certain currencies do, what the dollar index does. What's the theme of the day in terms of, you know, I saw you tweeting about lumber. So you do the same thing. Most traders don't do that. They don't think like that. They try to trade off a bar because it's easier, because they don't think they're capable of more. And so when I show them, you know, mindset, to work on your mindset is so hard. And all navel gazing in the world is not going to help you if you don't learn to read the difference between a reversal pattern and a little mean reversion or a triangle continuation pattern. I saw a few traders who tried to trade double tops recently, but it wasn't a double top. It was a continuation pattern. So that's the same with the language around money and risk management. They need to really go and study mathematics and those, you know, those little logic exercises, like one machine creates 500 widgets, five machines create 1,000 widgets. How many widgets would seven machines create? Right? They're all over the internet. That's how you start practicing logical thinking. And again, it's easier to email someone, help me, or to read a trading psychology book, or to complain on Twitter that you don't make money, than doing that work. So that's pretty much it.
Yeah, no, and by the way, I'd say that goes beyond trading. I mean, I think people are just increasingly used to get me the answer because it's available at their fingertips with Google or by tweeting at somebody. And increasingly, it's hard to get people to think about the right way of thinking rather than, you know, the system two versus system one. Let me reset the room for everybody's here for the remaining minutes. Please make sure you follow Mandy Rafsanjani here on Twitter. You can tell very thoughtful in the way that she expresses things. And again, my name is Michael Gaia. This will be available as a podcast in a few days here. One of the things we didn't hit on, Mandy, which I think is actually a pretty big deal over time when it comes to trading and investing, is the reward system, the biological response, right, that happens. And, you know, if your trading style is volatile, which is fine, right? Big gains, big losses, still volatile. Hopefully the average is higher. The problem there is that, you know, I do believe that there's an aspect of the mind that goes numb towards rewards. You need kind of bigger and bigger dopamine hits, right? When you're going up and down and up and down. And that can have really negative consequences outside of the domain of trading, right? As we've seen from history of, you know, a lot of these traders that go down, you know, you can argue dark paths. How do you think about maintaining your highs and your lows when you're in this business? Because I do believe that it really does take a toll on one biologically the longer they're in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you see so many traders who suffer from the stress that they went through, you know, with hormonal imbalances. Like what's the hormone that when you're under stress, the
cortisol, right?
Cortisol, exactly. Right. Yeah. And, you know, adrenals are being shot, and then they, you know, they don't recover. Like, you know, we see that in a lot, the health impact. Well, when we talk about stress, you know, there are two pathways for me. One is the internal pathway, and then, of course, the external pathway, meaning, you know, you're doing your breathing exercises. I'm a big fan of Wim Hof. Ice baths I love as well. I love a good challenge, you know. I never used to love a good challenge, but I now love a good challenge. So that was, for example, one of the big changes that I created in my identity when I saw myself as someone avoiding challenges and hiding. And now I see myself as someone who loves a challenge. How did I do that? I decided that I am that person. That's how quick it can be. And then I followed through on that. But so the external is, you know, some talk about meditation. I personally, you know, I saw someone saying in order to succeed in trading, you have to meditate, right? Talking about the lies on Twitter. No, you don't. I know so many successful traders who don't meditate, who don't do mindfulness. Is it useful and helpful? Yeah, of course. Like if you want to do it, do it. If you feel it helps you, do it. It's not for everyone and it's not necessary to trade because what I see many do then, they rather do mindfulness and meditation than preparing for the markets. And when we get stressed, what do? We stop doing the things that are important to do to operate on our highest levels. We start eating junk food. We don't sleep well. We get cranky with our environment. We don't have an environment for success that helps us to stay even keeled and, you know, lifts us up because we all need that. We all need someone sometimes who says, you know what, you screwed up. That's okay. You'll make it back. You'll find a way to do better. And we need some sort of comfort. We don't get that much in trading, right? So, but we can create that kind of environment that helps us to deal with the stress. The internal stress is stress management is I ask myself when I feel stressed, what is it that I'm afraid of? Right? So stress is really the fear of not getting what you want, your profits, or getting what you don't want, losses or blowing up, right? That's how basic it is for me. And then when I understand this, it's the fear of getting what I want or the what I don't want or the fear of not getting what I do want, then I can continue that thought. Most traders don't do that, or most people, you know, not just in, I mean, so many CEOs, they're stressed beyond. And when we understand what it is that we are afraid of, then we can ask ourselves, is that really true? Is that a fear that is actually something that we need to take into consideration? So when I drive my car and I'm afraid of having an accident and dying, that's a really good possibility. So I need to put something in place that protects me from that. My seatbelt, the airbags, a solid German car, of course, right? And then being not dreaming, not playing on my phone, but being really present in the moment and looking forward and looking at where there's potential risks. It's the same we can do in trading. So in a nutshell, what you want to do is you want to create an environment of a support team. So Linda was very strong on a team. You can see that in her book. She always had people around her who were uplifting, who were go-getters, who were possibility thinkers, who in times when the shit hit the fan, they would come and help and would help find a solution. And when you know, once you know how to find solutions, once you understand how to resolve problems, you don't need to be afraid of challenges anymore, right? You don't need to be afraid of making stupid choices that backfire on you because you know that you have the resourcefulness and the thought patterns and the logic thinking and the skill of reading the markets that will help you to come back on top. And Linda always says she's not the best trader, but she knows how to come back from a losing trade. And she also has friends that she consults with. What do you think about the markets right now? She never assumes that she knows everything. Again, when you read her book, you will see it's so obvious. Retail traders don't have that accessible, unfortunately.
Let's talk about your own trading for a moment. I've heard some of your prior conversations. Sounds like you're primarily trading the DAX, but also do perhaps some of the US. Talk about trading the DAX in a year like this year. I mean, arguably, you make the case that trends are trends. It doesn't matter what index or what country you're investing in. But you just looking at a casual look at the DAX index, it looks like there were a lot of pitfalls, a lot of potential whipsaws that could have happened this year. How have you done trading the DAX? What's your sense of where we are market-wise when it comes to European equities? Any kind of thoughts there I think would be interesting.
We'll be back after a quick break.
foodies unite with How You Dish. It's social media with a secret sauce. Food, the world's first network for food enthusiasts. How You Dish connects foodies across the world. Share kitchen tips and recipe hacks. Discover hidden gem food joints and street food. Find foodies like you. Connect, chat, and organize meetups. How You Dish makes it simple to connect through food anywhere in the world. So, how do you dish? Download How You Dish on the Apple App Store now.
Yeah, so I'm a short-term trader. It comes back to understanding yourself, right? So I'm a detailed person by nature. I walk past the car and I see the tiniest scratch, right? So I'm doing really well on shorter time frames than on larger time frames. And that's why I'm not so impacted by long-term trends. It's also a disadvantage because the large money, the big money is made in the investing in staying the trade for a few weeks or a few months if the trend is there. I can't trade. I can't read the market long term. It's just not my nature. So that goes back to someone asked me what's the difference between, someone asked me if I believe anyone can be a successful trader. And I say, yes, anybody can make money, can be profitable, if they overcome whatever's holding them back on the mindset level and they work on their skill set. But can everybody be a market wizard like Linda? No. I think there is a lot of talent and a lot of conditioning from childhood that gives you a step forward, gives you an advantage. I mean, having said that, everybody struggles with something else. So even the successful traders struggle with certain behavioral patterns that on one hand help them to succeed, on the other hand, don't help them. So I'm very, very aware of my own limitations and I work within that realm. And that's why long term, it doesn't matter to me what the DAX does. Yeah. And I trade the Dow in, so depending on the time zone we are in. So right now the Dow closes at 8 in the morning. So I get up and trade the closing of the Dow. Again, that is so small picture. It doesn't matter what the big picture does. But at the same time, having said that, I look at people like you who have an understanding of the big picture, and I keep that in mind. So when I saw your tweet about market melting up, I did not go short. I can tell you that. I was like, Michael knows something that I don't know. And I honor that. So sorry, I can't really answer your question.
No, because I
honestly don't know.
No, but it's funny because I had not looked at the DAX index since October 2nd. And I mean, yeah, it was a pretty sizable move. I mean, a lot of that for me was based on sentiment and then certain indicators. But the thing is, as you know, I always make this point, trading investing is perhaps the only domain in life where you can be right in your thesis and lose money or wrong in your thesis and make money, right? That there's a degree of randomness to the outcome, even though the process that gets you to the outcome, could be correct. Now, you had mentioned this a little bit earlier, that you got to follow your rules. That, of course, doesn't mean that your rules are guaranteed to work. But how do you kind of write your mentality when you're following rules and it seems like the rules are not helping, right? Because you're going to have those periods inevitably.
I mean, what is following rules, right? I always go back to give me a definition first. And what most traders say is, well, if I see this on my chart and I see that on another chart, then I do that. To me, that's not following rules. Because, you had this wonderful interview with Denise and Denise talking about intuition. There's so much more to us humans and experienced traders like yourself than rules. Sometimes following rules is death. Right. So sometimes you need to do the opposite to stay alive. And to me, that's a rule. To me, it's a rule to learning to understand myself well enough when I can listen to my intuition and saying, don't do that. So part of that was I looked at, I love trading reversal patterns and, reversal patterns don't work in trending markets, as many have found out recently. And so I needed to go back and say, when is it that, let's say, a simple double top doesn't work? When does a double top setup turn into a triangle continuation pattern, for example? So I learned not only when my system works, but when my system doesn't work. I learned when I work, when I'm my best, having slept well, being happy, happy with my friends, no arguments, no tax bill, right? And knowing when I don't work, being tired and cranky, you know, my mom fell over recently, that affected me, right? It's normal. So then I scale back. So these are also rules. So we are so much more than just our methodology in terms of rules. Bring yourself and your environment and the circumstances into that as well. And if you made a call that you're not happy with, I always say, if you could have done better, Michael, you would have done better. And the journey is now to sit down with someone that you trust, that asks you really good questions, and find out how you could have done better. So next time, your intuition knows, hey, I've seen that before, that didn't work out. Let's not do that. Let's not go down that path. Or let's do this other thing, because that's what most likely is going to happen. And the thing is, many don't do that. They rather go and complain. And I'm not talking about you here. I'm talking about, you know, the majority of retail traders. They rather go and complain to their trading buddies about how they will never succeed, rather than saying, hey, trading buddy, can you sit down with me and look at my charts and have a look at how I can do that better? So how we do that, we go back to live market replay. So for example, I was working with a trader who said, oh, I have a mental problem. I take my profits to, it was the other trader who stayed in the trade before CPI and thought, you know, she has to have an emotional journal. But I know her. I've been working with her for 1 year. She is not neurotic. She's very rational. She ran a very successful fashion business in London. And I knew she is not neurotic. So I said, emotional trading journal is not going to help you. Let's have a look at what happened on your chart. And then we saw that she's trading options, and there was something around the options expiry why she didn't get out of the trade. It had nothing to do with mindset. On the back of that, then it became a mindset problem, because she tried to make that money back and started going on tilt, etc. But the tilting was a result of not reading the market correctly. And she would have thought that there's something wrong with her, that she has a mindset problem, if we hadn't gone back through live market replay and she realized, when I trade this outdated options, whatever the time frame was, I need to get out really quick, because the price collapses too fast. And then even if my price moves, if the candle moves into profit, the options profit is not there because of the time decay. So that was a skill set. And so whatever it was for you, Michael, there's the opportunity to grow and evolve, to get excited and know that you can become a better trader because of that.
There's something in the on your site, which I think is very well said, Mandy, which is most traders think success is based on their wins. Truth is, it's how they respond when they lose. And I love that, yeah, because it really is true, right? You can't control your outcome. You can control your reaction to the outcome. And to that point, let's talk about controlling your emotions when at a loss. And, you know, there's this term when it comes to behavioral finance, which is not a very fancy term, but it's well known from a lot of psychology studies that people get a case of the term literally is get evenitis. They want to get back to break even, right? That they don't want to step away. When they're at a loss, they keep on trading and trading, and they keep trying and trying to come back because they feel they have to come back right away. When you're yourself trading and at a loss, how do you respond to it? Do you trade less? Do you step away for a little bit of time? What's your own reaction function to the outcome?
Yeah, so my biggest demise was, and still is, wanting to martingale into positions. Because again, trading on CFDs, we can do so much more with our money, because you can, you know, add to individual trades, whereas the American traders, and they add to a position, it averages out, I believe. So the pathway for me was, number one, understanding why I would want to do that. Why would I want to do such stupid things when I know it is actually not going to help me achieve what I want to achieve? Right? I was working with a trader who he makes around six figures a year, low six figures, like 150,000 or so. And he had a really good trade on the last leg down with the ES. And I don't know, made like 30,000 or something. And he has been trying to short the ES for the last 2 weeks. And we looked at it again on Live Market Replay and I said, is that a short for you? And he said, no, actually it's not. I said, what happened? His wife said she wants to retire. She had enough. And suddenly he felt the urge to getting another $30,000 profit like he did in the last leg down. And he was having FOMO, being afraid that he's going to miss that short. So he started going short way too early. Most probably, you know, if he hadn't understood what was going on for him, what the driving force was, he would have been bombed out before the actual short, if it ever happens, would have happened. And on the top of that, he missed out on all this beautiful upside movement, right? He could have made another $30,000 going long. Now, so that's the first step. I look at what's my driving force, what is unresolved within me that creates those emotions. And then the second step for me is I always, and that's what I do with my traders as well, I don't work so much on emotions. I work more on thinking, because when someone says to me they're frustrated, I don't know what their version of frustration is, what that feeling is. Could be something completely different to what I deem as frustration. But when I ask more and ask them, describe it to me, and I get the words, then I understand more about what's going on for them. So the second part is reframing your thinking. In the past, I would, you know, not get out of a losing trade. Why? I would say to myself, I betcha the moment I'm getting out, it's going to turn around. That was immediately the thought that would come through my mind. And then I would get a mental image with it as well, seeing the market turning around, going into profit without me. And, you know, there was some childhood conditioning that I had to clear up. And once you understand that, it's easy to clear it up, right? You just need to get to that point, understanding what it actually is. So then when I understand what I'm thinking, when I have the self-awareness by writing it down in the moment or talking it out loud and recording myself, if I don't want to write when I'm in a trade, then I can change that. So every time I say to myself, I bet you at the moment I'm getting out, it's going to turn around, I say to myself, yes, it probably will, because this is Trader Murphy's Law. So I'm not making myself wrong and say, no, it wouldn't, because the reality is it does. So I'm trying to be very, very honest with myself. And then I say, but that's not the point. The point is that you need to get out. And I practice that. So that is as simple as it can be. Sometimes it's something deeper. And, you know, sometimes it's trauma that needs to be healed and released. And I was working with a trader, really interesting. He tried to pass a prop firm as well for many years. And he would always get so close. And then something would happen in the last week and he would get bombed out. And he's like, what is it? It drives me nuts. And so we did some work and asked him a few questions. He had done a lot of work on himself already, so it was quite easy for me. And I said to him, how do you feel? And he said, sad. And I said, I feel like grief in your voice. And he said, yeah, you're right. And I said, what does it remind you of? Well, when my grandfather died. What happened when your grandfather died? My life turned into mayhem, foster care, abuse, and so on. Now I understand why he gets angry and sabotages when he has a small loss. You know, why did he go on tilt afterwards? And then we healed that, because it was trauma for him. We healed that trauma. And he just emailed me this morning saying that he finally passed the challenge, and a relief with that. Not because he passed the challenge, but he had overcome this thing that had stopped him in his tracks, and he just didn't know why. So I did a lot of work around trauma release as well for myself. We all had trauma, right? Like, none of us escaped unscathed. So, and so that's pretty much what I do. And also, as I said, modeling and backtesting. Modeling, I learned from Linda Rushke's work. I never knew what modeling is. I always understood backtesting. So I would go back and say, how many times did a double top or double bottom occur? And how many times did it work or not work? So I got my stats on that. I actually trade a Bollinger Band strategy, quite simplified. And I got my stats. I know when it works, when it doesn't work. But modeling was something new to me. What happens if? And so what happens if you enter on a breakout of the first 15-minute bar after the opening? How many ticks does it most of the time go to? What happens when the market gaps up 2% compared to 0.05%? And then you get statistics for that. And if you know that if there's a gap up, like after the CPI, which was a massive gap up, and the market in 80% of the time continues upwards, this is what I learned from Handelstats, Richard Miller. He does a lot of modeling. He's got an amazing spreadsheet with crazy numbers. I knew that. And then I didn't go short because I knew the statistics of what happened. So the work needs to be done on both levels. the competence and the, you know, healing your conditioning. Sorry, long-winded answer.
No, that's great. Again, everybody here, please make sure you follow Mandy. Maybe just last question on my end, which I think is interesting from a sort of self-reflection standpoint. You know the old joke, right? If you ask a room full of people, how many of you think you're a better than average driver, right? Yeah. Everybody will raise their hands, right? So in the context of being a better than average trader, it's got to be more than just performance, right? That makes somebody great. What makes somebody from a behavioral perspective, psychological perspective, from your vantage point, what makes somebody better than average at this business?
I always say, show me your goals and I know your dreams. Show me your standards and I know the goals you will achieve. In a nutshell, they have high standards for themselves, meaning they do what needs to be done no matter how they feel about it. They get up in the morning and they do their job. They do, even after a hard trading day, they do the preparation for the day. They know that they have to manage their stress and they go to the gym or running or whatever they do for stress management, and they do it not because they like it, but because they know it will help them to perform at the highest levels. And so there is no questioning, there's no arguing with themselves, they just do it. And it's the work ethics, really. And it's, you know, you could call it discipline, but I think it's far beyond discipline. It's a way of life. It's your identity. It's your self-image. That's what I can see. And anybody can create that. What I did was I did the ocean test and looked at the questions for conscientiousness, because I was low in conscientiousness, right? Again, off the charts. And so I wrote down the questions that they asked, and then I put them on my wall. And every day I tried to do what the conscientiousness questions asked to do. You know, keeping a clean desk, doing, making up your bed. It's not the making up my bed that's making me a better trader. It's the discipline of doing that, practicing the small things so that I can do the big things. So that's what I think, in a nutshell, what the big difference is.
Yeah, no, I very much like that response to this. Again, everybody here, thank you for joining. Please make sure you follow Mandy Rafsanjani. Mandy, first time you and I are chatting. I would love to do space with you and Linda Rashke at some point. I'll try and coordinate that. I think it'd be great for the audience. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Thank you for all the support. Thank you, Mandy.
The content in this program is for informational purposes only. You should not construe any information or other material as investment, financial, tax, or other advice. The views expressed by the participants are solely their own. A participant may have taken or recommended any investment position discussed, but may close such position or alter its recommendation at any time without notice. Nothing contained in this program constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, endorsement, or offer to buy or sell any securities or other financial instruments in any jurisdiction. Please consult your own investment or financial advisor for advice related to all investment decisions. Don't forget to follow at Lead Lag Report on X, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube, and check out the Lead Lag Report at www.leadlagreport.com. Use promo code PODCAST30 for 2 weeks free and 30% off to get access to award-winning research and anticipate stock market crashes, corrections, and bear markets.